Russell, and this is side two of tape number 395, and June 29th, 1979. When I was attending that conference on UFOs in the Bay Area last April, I began to hear the description, as I say, the people in black that follow up these sightings, and the physical description and similarities of people that are seen. Short, humanoid, short arms, short necks, pointed ears, tight skin, holes for eyes. And I began to think of the psychiatrists that see the people afterwards that hypnotize them and recount the stories, and wondering who are the cast of characters that would be involved in the UFO situation if they're man-made, like Mr. Valley is saying, if they're not outer space, if they're Nazi space scientists, if they're Nazi doctors. Where is Dr. Mengele? He's been working on genetics for 40 years. The boys from Brazil was about that gentleman, if you can call him a gentleman. I take that back. During a crisis period, I guess in the 50s, it's been a while, I forget when, there's a new book out about the thalidomide drugs made by Merrill Richardson, given to people who were pregnant, women who were pregnant. Interesting that pregnant women suffered from the deformities genetically, and their children were born without arms or legs, what they described as fins. And I'm wondering if some of these experiments on these people, because that's been hushed up, we haven't seen photographs of these people since they've grown up. There were thousands of them in communities in Germany and England of the thalidomide children, and we haven't had any follow-up on that, or if it's been used since. But there was an article in Omni magazine that gave me the idea again, to think about being genetically altered. It came out in June of 1969, just this last month. It's an article called Problem of Space Laws, and the main subject was on the legal problems of space colonies, and it goes into the problem of quarantine laws, that you have to identify a disease or a character before you can quarantine people. What would you do up there? It'd be horrendous if diseases were brought up. And they go into space problems, particular ethical and legal problems in the next few decades. And then there were some other statements in the article on space laws which caught my interest. It said, permanent space habitats will raise a vast array of ethical and legal problems in the next few decades. Until our second and third generation of space citizens, extraterrestrial cultures will be shaped purely by economics and by our technological and physiological capabilities. Simply enabling men to live in space could raise some of the most difficult ethical questions man has ever raised or faced. Now, this is a magazine that is specifically, it's put out by Penthouse, I believe, but the whole magazine is on space, and this article is on space law and ethical questions. It said long-term colonists may have to be genetically adapted to survive their synthetic alien environment. Fitting colonists for permanent life in space could require anything from eugenic counseling of the parents to outright genetic engineering, which will be creating, in effect, a new species. Will our first contact with extraterrestrial intelligence come when we meet our own genetically refabricated children? Question mark. No one has the answers, but the question that Omni magazine is asking is what I've been asking myself for a long time. And while I don't like to spend a lot of time in speculation, I do think that that is worth asking when it's asked in a magazine like that in regards to space law and creating a new species. Are we now, at first, until we get our second or third generation, meeting our own genetically refabricated children? Another article in along the lines of space law, it said that high pressures will come on the environment of a space colony. It'll demand psychiatric drugs to control undesirable behavior and to erase traumatic memories, I guess the memories of what life was like back on Earth, and even to tailor sexual preferences to suit the colony's population balance. All such manipulative possibilities raise profound ethical and legal issues. I guess if you need more women, you create women. If you want men, you can make men. You can balance the sexuality up there and control the behavior. I think of the batch consignment down in Jonestown and the batch of drugs that were sent down there and how people were kept quiet through drugs, given lobotomies through drugs if they wanted to leave. And they have now begun to discuss erasing traumatic memories. The memories may be sweet of the past, and the present may be downright miserable up there. Another article in May of 69, a month earlier, in Omni magazine on space and the mind, called Revolt in Space. And this article is about having to have cities in space. What will it be like living there? What will happen to the emotions and psyches of people? Now, this isn't science fiction. These are articles based upon studies. There's three doctors quoted, Dr. Jay Shirley, Dr. Natani, and Dr. Sengel from the Veterans Administration Hospital in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. They were discussing the psyche of people that the Skylab that went up there in 1974, the crew didn't like it. They felt that the place was messed up. They didn't like the food. They didn't like the soap. They didn't like the toilets. They said they were overworked. They were being driven to the walls, and they described several space diseases. One was solipsism syndrome, which is losing grasp of reality that men from NASA get when people are isolated and confused and they begin not to know if they're talking to objects or real people, whether it's their imagination or not. There's another syndrome. It's called Shimanagashi, feeling isolated, vaguely uncomfortable, intellectually stilted. It's been used for punishment and isolation of prisoners. And then they're referring to space neurosis, disorientation from being with unfamiliar neighborhoods in space. I don't know whether that's normal. I should think it would be perfectly normal to be unfamiliar. But they call that space neurosis and refer to it as a disease. I don't know who's sick, the people that are planning all this or the people that are going to go up there and have to take it. But they're already categorizing the types of mental illnesses and the possibility of revolt in space. And, of course, the way to save that is to drug people out of their heads or genetically alter them so that they don't know the difference. These doctors from Oklahoma from the Veterans Hospital were talking about psychological problems, and they said people who will do the best in space are going to be latent heterosexuals, those with conventional sexual preferences but little need for physical intimacy. And they said these are the same people who survive well at remote weather stations. And I think of the Antarctic and the Arctic and the Alternative 3 talking about secret meetings in submarines. This may be the kind of nursing ground for the UFOs in the Arctic region. There are allegations that it has been. And this article, this is May 1979 at Omni said, our space psychology can be summed up in that you send a man to space, but we, the plural we, have no idea if he's going to want to stay there or come back. So evidently they're doing psychological studies on those best to adapt, the possible breakdowns for being there, the kinds of drugs to solve it, and the genetic mutilations that go along with it. I think this is pretty scary, and I don't know that Omni's a great authority or not, but these doctors are being quoted, just as Gerard O'Neill at Princeton is being quoted, and I choose to just read it. I may not accept all of it, but I'm just going to put it in the back of my mind and keep it there and share it with you. I was driving along the radio, I think it was in the car radio, in January of this year, 1979, and I keep a notepad in case I hear something interesting or take notes. And it was a religious show on Sunday morning, and somewhere between 7 and 8 a.m. going up towards San Francisco. And a gentleman was telling how NASA and the military were going to solve the problems of the world. It was a Christian church service. And this man said that he had worked for the peace, similar to the Peace Corps, and went into the Middle East to try and make a gap between the Muslims and the Jews. Well, of course, the intelligence community and the Pentagon have always wanted factions divided, you know, fighting each other, divide and conquer, and that's pretty dangerous to want peace between Muslims and Jews. And then he went on to say that he was taken to a hospital for 2 years. He didn't say he broke a back or broke a leg or had a breakdown or anything. He said he was taken to a hospital, and he didn't name it or what it was, But when he got out of the hospital, he was transformed. He said, in quotes, "When I got out of the hospital, I knew that the U.S. military and that NASA had the solution for world peace." He said it has to do with weapons and the space program, but he turned to NASA and the military and realized that if people would accept their solution, that we would have peace on the earth and that they had come across a new idea for peace. He got this insight after spending 2 years in a hospital, but he didn't say where he was those 2 years. And I think it's interesting how he was selling NASA's interpretation of peace on a Christian program linked to the military hospital where he stayed. That's where he got his insight, that they had the solutions and that we should follow them. Alternative 3 talks about missing people, missing scientists, missing space experts, and so forth. I have an article here, two articles, that you might have missed, and I want to be sure that you get them because there's been no follow-up, and I'm always interested in these articles that are left dangling without anything to announce afterwards that the problem is solved. One was in the Dallas Times-Herald, April 21st, 1979, two U.S. jet fighters missing for 8 days. They had been missing since April the 12th. Two Air Force pilots missing more than a week, a massive search, U-2 reconnaissance, helicopters, and so forth. The aircraft went out, and two pilots were turned up missing. They're still missing. This was quite a while ago, printed April the 21st, 1979. It's from the Dallas Times-Herald. A Captain Michael G. Humphreys from Dallas, and he was last heard from returning to Holloman Air Force Base near New Mexico. The other missing pilot is Captain Pollock of Idaho, who checked off from White Sands facility, and the Pentagon officials said they had no record of them. The incident occurred in New Mexico, where Humphreys and Pollock were involved in Nellis Air Force Base in Nevada as a special Air Force unit, and they went out, the two went out together. There was one report from the Pentagon that said maybe the two fighters collided, or maybe they simultaneously flew into a mountainside. Now, we're getting a lot of simultaneous. It's like G. Robert Blakey saying that two gunmen simultaneously hit a John Kennedy who didn't know each other, possibly. If you're going to have a second gunman at the fence and Lee Harvey Oswald at a window, and they're both shooting, but Oswald did the fatal bullet, maybe it was a simultaneous and not worked out together. The Pentagon said they have no direct evidence that this is simultaneous. There's no radio transcripts from either pilot. And they were very skilled pilots, and the military and civil air patrol sent over 200 sorties over the New Mexico terrain and couldn't find them. That was April 21st, 1979. May 1979, search for missing Air Force pilots, planes proved fruitless. They never came in on the new frequency. They disappeared from the radar screens. We conducted a thorough air search. Civil Air Patrol, Air Force helicopters, special C-130 electronic control ships. They've looked for them. The last radar contact in the area didn't find a thing. And since April, these two top pilots have been missing. There's no reason with all of that equipment not to find a splinter from two airplanes, but they're gone, evidently completely gone. Unless they've gone on to some other war games or spaceships, these planes are missing. I received an article from the New York Post from one of the listeners back in New York. I always appreciate getting these from all of you. I constantly get new articles coming in, and I can't use them all at the same time, but eventually I hope I get to them. This one is for the New York Post, May the 7th, 1979, The Boy Who Came Back from the Dead. It's not a boy, it's a college student. He disappeared for 15 months. He went on a cross-country skiing trip to Massachusetts, and he can't remember anything that happened. He's 24 years old. He vanished from the shores of Lake Michigan in 1978, and he woke up on a Saturday night in Massachusetts in a field of grass, and he said, "I didn't know where I was or how I got there." He bought a newspaper. He thought it was 1978. He had no memory. And he doesn't know at all how he ended up in this field, and evidently there are no people that have been taking care of him who came forward and said that they had been taking care of him. He said he went out one evening and it was very cold. He was a college senior. he'd gotten a degree in German in absentia. Evidently, they thought he had died. Gave him a college degree. He told his roommate that he was going on a skiing trip and disappeared. And all of a sudden, the Massachusetts police found him, and he was laying in the field and with absolutely no memory of what happened to his experience. Now, I heard at one conference an article about UFOs and discussion about people losing time, that they'll start out, say, from an area like San Francisco to Sacramento, and it'll take 5 hours to get there. There's a big hunk of time missing, and they say they went continuously, but they've been diverted somewhere and were kept and then put back on the road. And people who are having appearances with spaceships or memory of spaceships are also having memory losses. And there's a lot of material being published, articles on that. And, of course, you wonder where this person was, that all of a sudden he wakes up in a field and finds that a whole year is gone. When he woke up in this field, he had hitchhiking signs from Ohio, Reno, Chicago, Sacramento, a map of San Francisco, a book of Confucius, a poetry book, and swimming goggles, even though he says he was never a swimmer, and running shoes and so forth that were in a backpack, and he can't account, a college student can't account for his time. We all know that there is a disease called amnesia, but usually a person who suffers from that disease doesn't know who he is, and he's picked up and placed and located. The family will request, you know, if there's a missing person, they'll put out a feeler and usually find a person suffering from amnesia. I think the phenomena that's taking place around the country with some of the articles that I'm reading and receiving from other people is a possibility that somebody is playing around with their lives or their minds, that certain circumstances are entering in beyond their control. And when you read the documents of the CIA and their experimentations and their goals for the last 30 years, it's easy to see that there may be many more victims of experimentation that we even dream that there are, because if you read the budget that they have and the technology and the goals, then some of the products of all those efforts are walking the streets, and it's hard to separate which are the ones that are suffering from being tampered with psychologically. When a system makes up its mind, it's going to find out how you react under all these circumstances. You don't know who the victims are. The Air Force has a new chief. This is June 23rd, 1979. German-born nuclear scientist by the name of Hans Mark, M-A-R-K. When Dr. Hans Mark moves his things across a Pentagon hall from the office of the Air Force Undersecretary to the larger suite as Air Force Secretary, he will have a blackboard and a blue model of the space shuttle. The German-born academic likes to sketch the points of each argument on the blackboard. The space shuttle is to remind visitors that the Air Force for the last two decades of the century will be a space force. Space shuttle craft are painted white. Mark ordered the blue one to emphasize the Air Force role in the joint military-civilian program. He's done more than anyone else to stimulate interest in space, an Air Force general said. He has been undersecretary of the Air Force. He was director of NASA Ames Research in Mountain View, California, with a Ph.D. from University of California and MIT, and he is coming from UC Davis, the Defense Department, to become the new Air Force chief who has, in quotes, his eye on space. Mr. Mark wanted to cut a new Panama Canal with nuclear explosives, but that was stopped in 1965. As Air Force Secretary, he'll be in charge of logistical and personnel programs. And he resigned as Air Force Secretary. He was born in Mannheim, Germany in 1929. He came to this country and became a citizen in 1945, probably one of the Project Paperclip scientists. Hans Mark, Dr. Hans Mark, German-born nuclear scientist, will be the new Air Force chief with his eye on space stations and space shuttle. The failure of Skylab to stay up in space is blamed on the United States not giving enough money or interest in the space program. There's an article, Nations Leadership Decried for Flaws in Space Program. Skylab didn't have to fall. This is according to the National Space Institute. It didn't have to fall. It represents the historic and continuing failure of this nation's executive leadership to provide the space program with long-range goals and objectives along with the necessary funding. Well, you can be sure if Ronald Reagan or Senator Howard Baker or Mr. Bush or John Connally gets in, they will have all the funding they want for all the space programs that they want. They're blaming the bad job of Skylab on the executive leadership. They can use it as a campaign issue and make sure that they get everything they need if they can get the Republicans in as president in 1980. And with a Democratic Jimmy Carter, they could probably get all that they need. But the descent of Skylab is being blamed on weak executives that didn't give them all the money and the muscle they needed. As articles come in, and I've received a lot of them from you since I brought up the subject of Alternative 3, as they come in, you can see the categories that I have listed on this sheet, and I'll put them into the proper structures. An example, say number 3 on the sheet, the denial of public officials or the avoidance of answers. I'll put the one about Judwell Bank and their reaction to the question on Dr. Valentine. Way down there in space, of course, all of NASA is Nazi because it was the Nazi space scientist that began the space program. But 19B, I have a section called Nazis and NASA Yesterday, Today, and the Use of Control. I have an article by Army General John Medeiros. He was the right-hand man of Adolf Hitler. He spearheaded the American drive into space. And he had an article, not too long ago, it was in 1978, saying the Lord advised him how to run the nation's rocket and satellite effort. In 1957, he was Major General at Redstone Arsenal in Alabama. In January of 1958, he helped with Wernher von Braun launch the German rocket that was made in America. They brought them over here and then continued to make them in Alabama. He launched an 18-pound satellite. He said, von Braun and I were in a race then against the Russians with space as the prize, and God helped him work. He asked the Lord for help in directing the space program, and God was a constant source of guidance and advice, and they launched Explorer 1. Dr. von Braun and Mr. Medeiros, John Medeiros, brought over here from Germany, worked on the space program with the help of God. Another Nazi that's active in the space program, his name is Kraft Ehrich, E-H-R-I-C-K-E. I got a biography of Mr. Ehrich and his background, one page, from a book called Our Extraterrestrial Heritage, From UFOs to Space Colonies, put out by the American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics. Personal information, Dr. Ehrich started his rocketry and space career in 1942 on the German V-2 rocket development at Punamon. He came to this country in 1945. Through 1952, he worked in the U.S. Army's missile and rocket development. From 52 to 54, he was assistant project engineer on long-range glide rocket studies for Bell Aircraft. He subsequently joined Convair for the development of Atlas ICBMs and so forth. He has written an article on exo-industrial productivity, on extraterrestrial imperative of our time. And the gist of the summary that he has on this one page from this one brochure of a conference where he spoke was that, this is in quotes, despite unparalleled advances in scientific understanding and technology and capability, humanity is threatened by hunger, poverty, pollution, and worsening shortages of raw material and energy. And he goes into the need and development of space colonies. This is what is going on over and over again, repetition in these articles, and it all may be true, threatened by hunger, threatened by poverty, threatened by pollution, and shortages of energy and raw material, they have to build these colonies. Now, I believe that the technology and the money that we have would clean up all these things if they wanted it to. I think that this is genocidal and that they're going to use the money for another purpose, to remove the people that are doing the polluting, who are impoverished, who are hungry, and so forth, and just keep enough slave labor for the drawing up of the energy and those resources. But this particular man worked with Wernher von Braun. He came over on the Project Paperclip. And the important thing is that these scientists are not using any of that technology to solve the problems on planet Earth. They don't want to clean it up. They don't care about. They want to rule the world. They want to rule it from up there. They don't care how they do it or how many people die or the pollution that's created to do it. The main thing is that they want control. They've wanted it since the days of Adolf Hitler. And the way they're going to do it is through the rockets and the weapons and the space colonies. And the more I reread my articles of what I have, and the more I read of what's coming in, after reading Alternative 3, it makes sense, and I'm sorry I wasn't more systematic about saving the space articles. I wasn't too interested until recently on the intent and just how they could be used. I know there's some diabolical ways they could be used, the satellites, and I have plenty of information on that. But it was only in February when I got Alternative 3 that I realized how far gone we are in even thinking of stopping these people because of their intent and their technology. I talk at a great deal on KGO and on several other radio stations about the book Alternative 3 and the missing people and the allegations of missing people. And right after I started talking about that and after the UFO conference in San Francisco where they were very evasive about the subject of these space colonies when it was hard to even get a question asked, even though there are about 20 people in the audience. Right after that, there's a full-page, half-page ad in the San Jose Mercury, and I sent some of you a copy of this. If others want it, write to me. Send a self-addressed stamped envelope, a large-size envelope, and I'll copy this article for you. It's put out by Ford Aerospace Communications Corporation. Ford Motor Company has a aerospace communications corporation, and the title of the ad, it's a half-page ad, is called Missing Persons Bulletin. And on the left, there's sort of an English bowler hat, a quiet-looking, sleazy little guy, a silhouette, dark against a white background, and he's saying cartoon style, "Psst, do you fit this description?" And it says All Points Bulletin. The San Jose Mercury ad, it was May the 16th, 1979, All Points Bulletin for Talented Individuals. Does that mean all over the world? Does that mean from England or Ireland or New Zealand? Is it to work in a stimulating, high-technology environment is what they're looking for. And then they have in the corner rewards for discovery and subsequent employment. Does that mean kidnapping people, finding them, turning them into this organization? And the rewards for discovery and subsequent employment, if somebody stays, is that they get outstanding benefits, a Ford car purchasing plan, 12 paid holidays, tuition assistance, 100% medical and dental insurance premium for the employees and their dependents, their entire families, 100%. And then it goes into some of the skills that they need, and they list they want technicians, financial assistance, operation support systems, electrical and mechanical engineering, microwave design, advanced composites for buildings, develop new composite materials for satellite structural applications, must be familiar with graphite, KVR, tooling equipment, manufacturer experience, satellite propulsion. This obviously was for a satellite antenna design, spacecraft power system, microwave design, satellite transponders, and so forth. It's an ad for technical riders on space, people familiar with thermal control components, network control engineers, communication engineers, microwave designs, as I say, and composites for satellite structure applications, which must mean satellite buildings. They've got a Palo Alto address and a phone number. But the top of the article, the advertisement, which caught my eye after receiving Alternative 3 in February, and this was in May of 1979, was the ad, Missing Persons Bulletin. And do they get their employees or their suckers by swooping in on the missing persons? I believe that might be too obvious, but anything is possible these days, and I'm reading the words a little closer and looking behind the print a little closer and picking up a lot of clues and things that I passed over in the past that I maybe should have taken more time with. I have just a minute before closing on this tape to talk about Jonestown, the death of one primary witness and the death threat upon Charles Gary. Charles Gary was the attorney who represented Jonestown through a lot of hectic years where people were trying to expose Jim Jones, and he was sitting on the lid with Mark Lane, and they were both down there when over 900 people died, and they walked away. Charles Gary's life has been threatened. The Los Angeles Times said ex-Black Panther lawyer threatened. They didn't say Jonestown lawyer. Kathy Hunter died. She was one of the first people from the Ukiah Daily Journal to expose Jonestown. Mark Lane went to her house disguised as a reporter from Esquire magazine. I believe she was suing him. 59 years old, she died in a San Francisco hospital, described in quotes as bleeding ulcer and other physical problems. She went as far as Georgetown, couldn't get into Jonestown, was told she'd be killed. She was the victim of bomb scares in her hotel by members of People's Temple, and she returned back to Ukiah. Kathy Hunter was exposing Jonestown. 59 years old, she died June 27th, 1979. I believe their hit squad is succeeding and will erase people that know too much about Jonestown. Our time is up again. I'm sorry it goes so fast. I always have so much more to share with you, but I guess that's all we can put into 1 hour tape. I'll be back with you next week. You take care. And this is Mae Breslin, Carmel, California.